Last Sunday night, if you were here, we went through a lot of the information in Daniel chapter 10. And tonight, that's really where we want to spend the bulk of our time in Daniel, especially Daniel 11 and Daniel 12. Daniel, as we notice from the 10th chapter, was a prophet who received a message from God. And we're told in Daniel 10:1 that he not only received this very unusual information, but he also understood it. As Daniel considered what he had received, he was saddened. He knew that the information was very bad news. And we also pointed out from Daniel 10, verse 5, that after receiving this information, Daniel saw a heavenly creature. It was a very strong, it was a very powerful creature, and it terrified God's prophet. And we ended that lesson by noting that the heavenly creature in Daniel 10 was opposed by what's said to be the king of Persia. I argued in that lesson, and I believe successfully so, that this heavenly creature was a spiritual force, something like a good angel, and it was challenged by this king of Persia that is another spiritual force. Daniel's helper said that he was opposed in trying to get to Daniel with the information that he had. And he told Daniel, when I leave, I'm also going to have opposition as I go back to where I need to be. This creature said that he had been opposed for 21 days. And it was only through the help of Michael the archangel that he was able to get to Daniel. Michael came and offered some help to the good heavenly creature that appeared to God's prophet. It seems that Michael essentially drove off or drove away some type of wicked spirit, maybe an evil angel. With that in mind, if you were here last week and you recall those facts, or if you were not, if you'll bear that general information in mind, we're ready to study some information from Daniel 12 and Daniel 11. It's important to remember that Daniel, of course, was written. Daniel was receiving this information prior to the New Testament era, prior to the cross of Christ. We want to start in Daniel 12, verse 1. And at that time, shall Michael stand up, the great prince, who standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time, the Bible says, thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. Now, this is almost a puzzling passage, but I think we can break it down and understand it if we go through it in small sections. First of all, we again are introduced to Michael. And as we pointed out, Michael is identified, especially in Jude, as an archangel, a heavenly creature. We are told that a time would come when Michael, this archangel, would stand up. And that does not mean he needed a stretch. Stand up, as far as this heavenly creature, since he is not a physical creature as we are, that simply means that he was going to be called to action. He would be doing something. Michael's power, his authority, is found in the expression, great prince. Back in Daniel 10, last week, we noted how Michael had enough authority, he had enough force to come and help this other heavenly creature, and he was able to drive away an evil angel or some kind of evil force. And here we're specifically told that Michael is a mighty angel, and we're also given a little information or insight about his work. In Daniel 12, verse 1, the text that we read, it said that Michael was going to stand up for, quote, the children of thy people. Now, this information presents us with some very key details. Daniel, as we said, received this information, and we know that he was a Jew, a Hebrew. Daniel was a child of God, so his people would simply be then another reference to the people of God. Daniel had received information about the children of his people, and that would refer to some subsequent generation, people from a later time. Stated simply, Michael says at a time, or this angel said, not Michael, this angel said that a time would come when Michael would somehow help God's people. Now, this much of the text is clear. And this point, as far as an interpretive perspective, is agreeable to just about anybody who believes in the Bible. And we need to hold on to this single fact. And that is a fact that everybody agrees with, that at some time after Daniel, some future generation, God's people would receive special assistance from Michael. And if we lose sight of that single fact, we're not going to get the meaning of the text. In Daniel 12, verse 1, things are identified a little more fully. The angel, this heavenly creature, said that it was going to happen during a time of trouble. In other words, a time, a period would come when things were really bad. Things would be really awful, and Michael the archangel would somehow intervene. Now, if this is all the information that we had, it would probably be impossible to narrow down when this great time of trouble was. But Daniel was given some very specific information as we look at the verse. The prophet is told in that first verse that the time of trouble would be very distinctive. In fact, the creature says, as you look at this particular event, whatever that was, he said, if you look at all the history prior to that, or you can take history from the beginning up to that period of time, It's being said that this thing that's going to occur in the future, it's going to be unlike anything else that has ever occurred. It's going to stand out. There will be something distinctive. If you look at it in view of all the other tragedies, all the other problems, all the other catastrophes, they will have been less severe than this event. Well, premillennial people just love this kind of text because they will turn to it and say, aha, here is a passage which is still in the future, and they get from this nuclear bombs exploding all over the planet and all kinds of other wild things. Well, we can show, and I believe conclusively, that Daniel did not have in mind some kind of millennial nuclear war. We can establish that by the context. Before we get too far into Daniel chapter 12, we can look back into Daniel chapter 11 and see that Daniel the prophet was receiving some information that really is a picture of world history, history that we know. Daniel received in Daniel chapter 11, verse 2, some information about the Persian Empire. And if you go back and look at history, or if you will recall history, Persia did reign for a while. And then as you get down into verses 2 and 3 of Daniel chapter 11, you find that there is information about another empire, Greece. And again, as we go back and we look at our history books, that's precisely what we have. Those empires did exist. In verse 2 of Daniel 11, and now will I show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings of Persia, and the fourth shall be richer than they all. And when he is waxed strong through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Greece. And then in 3, and a mighty king shall stand up and shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. Well, most have heard about Alexander the Great, a very famous historical figure. He overthrew the Persians. He was able to conquer the known world in his day and time. And if you know anything about Alexander, you know that there was a four-way split as far as the kingdom. Well, that's what the writer is talking about here in verse 4. And the writer continues in Daniel chapter 11 to present some information that is historical information that matches up very well with history as we know it. And as he moves through time, he gets down to a period which is described in Daniel chapter 11, verses 31 through 35. And I want to move down there. And forces shall stand in his part, and they shall profane the sanctuary. That's a reference to Jerusalem and the temple that they had there. Even the fortress, and shall take away the continual burnt offering, and they shall set up the abomination that makes desolate. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he pervert by flatteries, but the people that know their God shall be strong and do exploits. And they that are wise among the people shall instruct many. Yet they shall fall by the sword and by flame, by captivity and by spoil many days. Now when they shall fall, they shall be helped with a little help. But many shall join themselves unto them with flatteries. And some of them that are wise shall fall to refine them, and to purify and to make them white, even unto the time of the end, because it is yet for the time appointed. Now Daniel has reached a point as far as this heavenly information that is about 175 years before Christ. That's the period of history that's being described. And if you've read anything about this, sometimes in our Bible classes we talk about a fellow, a ruler, by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes. Antiochus was not a nice man. About 175 years before Christ came, he was in power. He persecuted the Jews. He was a man who tried to destroy the scriptures. He was a man who, just as Daniel prophesied in Daniel chapter 11, tried to desecrate, and he did desecrate, the Jewish people. He told the Jews that they were no longer allowed to practice circumcision. He said that they could not observe the Sabbath. He said that if they had a copy of the scriptures, that was an offense, that was a capital offense. It could be punished by death. The Jewish leaders were told, about 175 years before Christ, that they were under orders to offer pagan sacrifice. And to encourage people to do this, there were Jews who were killed, adults and children, to serve as an example and a warning for others. Now, that's not information that we're making up. It is information that you can find just as easily as I can. And one of the places where you find it is in the book known as First Maccabees. Now, you can find that on the internet. Or if you have a Bible that may be a Catholic Bible, you can find it in that particular book as well. First Maccabees is a historical book. And it is not an inspired book, but it is a book that was written by God. But just as some other books of history can be helpful as far as trying to tell us what happened way back when, this is one of those books. Matthias Maccabeus was a Jewish high priest. In about 170 BC, he was asked by a government official to sacrifice to Greek gods. Well, he refused. He wanted to do what was right, and he not only refused, he took things a step further. There was a Jew who was going to offer a sacrifice, this pagan sacrifice. And this faithful Jew saw that, and he killed the one, the Jew, who was preparing to offer the sacrifice. Well, this incident caused officials to seek his arrest, and he took refuge in the wilderness of Judea. He had five sons. They went with him. And then this fellow began to call on fellow Jews to follow him. A war ensued, and today this conflict is recognized. It is memorialized by the holiday that we know as Hanukkah. Now, that's the short version. But I want to read for you some of the verses from 1 Maccabees so you can have a better understanding of what Daniel has in mind in Daniel chapter 11. The king sent messengers with letters to Jerusalem and to the cities of Judah, ordering them to follow customs that were foreign to the land, that is, contrary to the Jews, to prohibit holocaust, sacrifices, and libations that would be offerings in the sanctuary, to profane the Sabbaths and feast days, to desecrate the sanctuary and their sacred ministers, to build pagan temples and shrines, to offer sacrifice swine and unclean animals, to leave their sons uncircumcised, and to let themselves be defiled with every kind of impurity and abomination, so that they might forget the law and change all their observances. Whosoever refused to act according to the command of the king should be put to death. Such were the orders he published throughout the kingdom. He appointed inspectors over all the people and ordered the cities of Judah to offer sacrifices, each city in turn. Israel was driven into hiding wherever places of refuge could be found. And I'm not going verse by verse, but I'm just kind of giving you some highlights from the first three chapters. So they used their powers against Israel, against those who were caught each month in their cities. On the 25th day of each month, they sacrificed on the altar erected over the altar of holocaust. Women who had had their children circumcised were put to death, in keeping with the decree, with the babies hung from their necks. Their families also and those who had been circumcised were killed. They preferred to die rather than be defiled with unclean food or to profane the Holy Covenant, and they did die. Terrible affliction was upon Israel. And again, this is about 200 years before Christ. Then Mattathias and his sons tore their garments, put on sackcloth, and mourned bitterly. The officers of the king in charge of enforcing the apostasy came to the city to organize the sacrifices. Many of Israel joined them. But Mattathias and his sons gathered in a group apart. Then the officers of the king addressed Mattathias, "You are a leader, an honorable and great man in the city, supported by sons and kinsmen. Come now, be ye the first to obey the king's command, as all the Gentiles and the men of Judah and those who are left in Jerusalem have done. Then you and your sons shall be numbered among the king's friends and shall be enriched with silver and gold and many gifts." In other words, if you help us promote our pagan agenda, we will pay you. You'll be wealthy. You just go ahead and set the trend. You set the tone, and everything will be fine. But Mattathias answered in a loud voice, "Although all the Gentiles in the king's realm obey him, so that each forsakes the religion of his fathers and consents to the king's orders, yet I and my sons and my kinsmen will keep the covenant of our fathers. God forbid that we should forsake the law and the commandments. We will not obey the words of the king, nor depart from our religion in the slightest degree." As he finished saying these words, a certain Jew came forward in the sight of all to offer a sacrifice on the altar according to the king's order. When Mattathias saw him, he was filled with zeal. His heart was moved, and his just fury was aroused. He sprang forward and killed him upon the altar. At the same time, he killed the messenger of the king who was forcing them to sacrifice and tore down the altar. So he basically resisted these people in the best way that he could. That then was reported to the soldiers, the officers of the king who were in the city of David in Jerusalem, that certain men who had flouted the king's order had gone out to the hiding places in the desert. They knew that they were not going to be able to do that. So after they opposed the king, they had to run. They had to flee. Many hurried out after them, and having caught up with them, camped opposite and prepared to attack them on the Sabbath. Enough of this, the pursuer said to them, "Come out and obey the king's command, and your lives will be spared." In other words, here's a second chance. But they replied, "We will not come out, nor will we obey the king's command to profane the Sabbath." Then his son Judas, who was called Maccabeus, took his place. All his brothers and all who had joined his father supported him, and they carried on Israel's war joyfully. And this is really the background for Daniel chapter 11, verses 31 through 35. What the prophet sums up there happened about 200 years before Christ. Well, this history lesson that we just went over is the lesson that Daniel got. But Daniel's history lesson did not stop there. The writer, Daniel, went on and talked about something else that would happen in history, and this is in Daniel chapter 11, verse 40. And at that time, he says, "Of the end shall be the king of the south. Contend with him, and the king of the north shall come against him. like a whirlwind with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass through. Now, there are scores of ideas about who this king of the north is. I was recently in a Bible study with someone from here, and this passage was mentioned, and it was said that the king of the north, well, that represents America. Well, Daniel is talking about history, but he wasn't looking quite that far into the future. He is seeing a progression of history, and we can match it up either from a history book or from the scriptures. We have Persia, we have Greek, the Greek Empire, we have the time of Antiochus, about 200 years before Christ, and then as you follow history down, which is consistent with the New Testament, we get to the time when the Roman Empire was in power. And that's my understanding of Daniel chapter 11, verse 40, that when he talks about the king of the north, he is referring to the Roman Empire. That's the subject at the end of Daniel chapter 11, and then we get to the opening of Daniel chapter 12 and verse 1. Now, you might be scratching the head a little bit and thinking, well, what's all this have to do with Angel, the archangel? Well, we're ready to answer that question. If we bear in mind the history in Daniel chapter 11, then here's what we have in Daniel chapter 12, verse 1. And at that time. What's the time? If you look at it historically, we're now to the period when Rome was in power. Since we have the general time frame that is the New Testament era, let's introduce some additional information from Daniel chapter 12. This comes midway from the 12th chapter, the final chapter, verse 7. And I heard the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand under the heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever, that it shall be for a time, times and a half. And when they have made an end, and here's the important part, when they have made an end of breaking in pieces the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. Now this again is a very fascinating passage. Daniel said that there were going to be holy people, typically people that we would find associated with God, and he said these holy people were going to be crushed. That is, they were going to be broken. They were going to be cast down, overthrown, destroyed. Now, when we think of holy people, we normally think of people who are on the side of God, people who will be protected, people who will be saved, people who will be rescued. But here, Daniel says that there would be these holy people who would be destroyed. Well, who are the holy people, and what was this crushing blow? Well, it's not hard to identify. Jews, and again, this is historical information that we have both in the New Testament and outside the New Testament, Jews faced a crushing blow in 70 AD when Rome overthrew them. Jews basically lost it all at this particular time in history. The Romans came in and they literally cleaned house. Jews, they lost their genealogies as far as the records that they needed to keep things going. The temple was sacked and the Jews never recovered. Well, now, if Michael, in Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, had intended to protect the Jews, he failed because Rome came in and they sacked the place. If Michael had intended to protect the Hebrews, he failed in every possible way. He really botched the job. And that's not what he has in mind. Rather, the text is related to another Old Testament passage that we're probably familiar with, but maybe we've never really grasped. You remember Genesis chapter 49, verse 10? There's some passages that just kind of stand out, and that is one. That's the passage that says, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh come." There are a lot of people that can probably quote that, or at least give us a gist of the verse, but I'm not persuaded that a lot of people have really given consideration to what it means. Well, what does it mean? It means this. It means that Judah would not lose its national sovereignty, that is, its power, its existence, until, the writer says, until Shiloh came. Well, who was Shiloh? That simply is a reference to the Messiah. Daniel foresaw the time when the Messiah had come, that is, in the first century that we know, that we read about, for example, in Acts chapter 2. And since the Messiah came in that first century area during the time of Rome, the scepter could depart from Judah. Genesis 49, verse 10. And that's precisely what happened. The Jews lost their sovereignty. Rome came in, and Israel was no longer the holy people. Daniel predicted in Daniel chapter 12, verse 7, that they were going to be crushed, and that is precisely right. The Jews fell. Well, back in Daniel chapter 2, verse 44, we read about a kingdom, and their kingdom is used in the sense of the church. It would be established in the days of Rome, and that happened. When that happened, it changed things, and it changed things in a big way. In Romans chapter 2, verses 28 and 29, Paul said, "For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, Neither is that circumcision in the flesh. Paul said he is a Jew who is one inwardly. Circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter. Stated another way, Paul said that the true Jews, as far as the New Testament era is concerned, is not the child of Abraham. It's not the person who can trace her genealogy because those records were lost. But he said true Jews, instead of being a fleshly descendant of Abraham, a true Jew is a child of God. Now, if you think back earlier, I asked you to hold on to a very special fact. Daniel was told that a time would come when Michael would help the children of his people. Who were those children who were going to be helped by Michael at a future time? Well, as you put all the pieces together, those people that Daniel was told about were members of the church. When did Michael plan to offer that help? Jesus, if you turn over to Matthew chapter 24, verse 21, Jesus gives us the answer. It's interesting to compare what Jesus has to say in this particular passage with what we find back in Daniel chapter 12. Now, you may remember a basic division in Matthew chapter 24. Everything that Jesus says prior to Matthew 24, verse 36, relates to the destruction of Jerusalem. In verse 36, he changes gears. He says, but of that day, looking forward to a second time, and then he provides some additional material. But back in Matthew 24, 21, when he's still talking about Jerusalem, what happened in 70 AD, here's what he says. For then, he said, at that time there shall be a great tribulation, such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now. And then he went on to say, nothing ever in the history of the world after that time will match it. But that's precisely what Daniel was told, that a time was going to come, there would be a period of great tribulation, and nothing up until that time would be equivalent to it. Nothing would be similar, nothing would be able to match it. Well, going back to Daniel 12, verse 1, the text says that all the people involved in this matter would be delivered. Well, who were these people? And what were they delivered from? Simply this. All Christians were delivered from the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. That was a prophecy made in the book of Daniel, and we believe that that is exactly what happened. Because of this, Jesus gave advance warning, and that certainly was one means to help God's people. Jesus said, this is going to come. Here are the signs. You don't need to be caught unaware. He said, if you're in this particular place, you don't want to run back and get your cloak. You don't want to go back and get your coat. How come? Because the Romans are going to come in, and there will be no chance of escape. We also find in Daniel chapter 12 that Michael was somehow involved in the process of delivering New Testament saints. And then Daniel goes on. He has some additional information in Daniel 12 verses 2 and 3 about the end of time. But if we sum up the information that has been given tonight, the basic message is this. God knew that one of the world's worst events would happen in 70 AD. And he selected Michael, the archangel, to ensure that God's people were helped. Every single person received some kind of divine aid in that first century catastrophe. And that is an amazing demonstration of God's love. Truly is that God was concerned about every single one of his people. So not only the help from Christ as far as what was given concerning advance information, but also this other divine aid. When you put all that information together, at least I kind of sit back and think, wow, what a God. What a God of love, what a God of planning, an amazing God in every single way. And you know that amazing God is still amazing today. He still loves his people just as much as he did in first century times. He still wants to save people in the fullest possible way. And tonight we hope that you know that loving God, that you become one of his children by the plan that we've given so many times. Faith, repentance, confession, and baptism. Jesus died for us because he loves us, and that theme is found throughout the Bible. And tonight we hope that you've responded to the love of God, that you've become a Christian and you're living in the right way. If not, God either welcomes you to come back to his loving arms, or he invites you for the first time to enter into that relationship that he has for all people. Salvation, eternal life, all the spiritual blessings because he loves us. Tonight, if you're not right with God and we can help in some way, we let us know as we stand and sing the selected song.